Thank you for tuning in to the FactCheckVaccine.com audio stream podcast. If you find the following information helpful, please share it with others. And now we begin the audio stream.
That's what this investigation is really all about. Tony Fauci has been the mouthpiece of this pandemic in America and around the world. We've seen how he's lied in the emails. We've seen how he's played both sides of this, but not very well, calling the one side a conspiracy theory, the other one the obvious place to look, when the opposite now ends up being the truth. Now we have scientists that are basically saying, we only see this as a lab-created virus. There's no way to see this natural. If someone can do that, please provide that evidence because we can't find it anywhere. All of this, though, makes you wonder, who is this grandmaster, this sort of Wizard of Oz? He really is this tiny little person behind a curtain that has created this gigantic pandemic, destroyed our lives, made us wear masks, made us inject ourselves with vaccines we didn't want and didn't need, and now they're going after our children. Who is this person? Well, there's been someone that may be able to answer that question better than anybody. And she blew up this year, or over the last year. I'm talking about Dr. Judy Mikovits, who first locked horns with Fauci years ago. She touched on this in the groundbreaking, explosive, viral sensation, Plandemic.
It started really when I was 25 years old. I was part of the team that isolated HIV from the saliva and blood of the patients from France, where Luc Montagnier had originally isolated the virus. This was a confirmatory study, but Tony Fauci and Robert Gallo were working together then to spin the story in a different way. At that time, Dr. Rossetti was out of town, and Tony Fauci says, we understand that you have a paper in press, and we want a copy of it. And I said, yes, there's a paper in press, and it's confidential, and no, I will not give you a copy of it. He started screaming at me, then he said, give us the paper right now, or you'll be fired for insubordination. And I just said, I'm sure when Dr. Rossetti gets back, you can have the conversation. And so Frank comes back, several weeks later, and is really bullied into giving Fauci the paper. Fauci holds up the publication of the paper for several months, while Robert Gallo writes his own paper and takes all the credit, and of course patents are involved. This delay of the confirmation, literally led to spreading the virus around, killing millions.
Perhaps no one expressed the anguish of AIDS better than New York writer Larry Kramer. But he was even more angry at the federal government and the pharmaceutical industry. One person who felt Kramer's fury was NIH Dr. Anthony Fauci.
It's still been crushing to me to think that I didn't know my work in 1999 was something that had been avoided. From 83 and 82, when the virus was isolated, the virus didn't have to wait until 84 to be confirmed. Think of how many people, the entire continent of Africa, lost a generation as that virus was spread through because of the arrogance of a group of people. And it includes Robert Redfield, who's now the head of the CDC. Right along with Tony Fauci. They were working together to take credit and make money, and they had the patents on it and tailored them to IL-2 therapy, which was absolutely the wrong therapy. And had that not happened, millions wouldn't have died from HIV.
Of course, that was an excerpt from Plandemic, Dr. Judy Mikovits at the center of one of the most explosive and viral documentaries ever made, over a billion views. I am honored to be joined by Dr. Judy Mikovits right now. It's amazing to me as we sit in this moment, documents now being revealed. We've had an email dump, BuzzFeed, Washington Post email dump about what Dr. Anthony Fauci actually knew versus what was being said to the public. What he knew about gain of function versus what he was asking scientists to put papers out on. And to watch this, it's like this repeat of history taking place again. You have good scientists doing good work, and then this agenda machine steps in and seems to turn it or abuse it or use it. When you said they went and wrote their own paper and sort of held back your paper, did they just steal information or did they change the conclusions of where you were going?
Well, actually, it was more than that, because they didn't want the paper as much as they wanted the isolate. They wanted the virus. So they wanted both the isolate, you know, and the paper.
Okay.
And yes, they changed the direction. Bob Gallo and Tony Fauci said, in fact, their virus was a different virus from what the Luc Montagnier had isolated. They took the diagnostic test, a serology test, that it kind of changes everything based on the immune responses. They held up that serology test when they could have saved millions of lives. They changed everything by getting the isolate and rewriting history. and you know, here we are, deja vu all over again.
Was there any recourse? I mean, what can you do? You have a sort of a government scientist stepping in. Were you working for the government too, or was it private? How is that the nature of the balance of that?
That's a really important part of the entire story, because then President Ronald Reagan had come into office saying he was going to reduce the size of the federal government. So what they did was really a scam. Instead of reducing the size of the federal government, they simply had companies, contractors, hire the staff and the government workers like Tony Fauci and Bob Gallo and Frank Rossetti. So I was a contract worker. I was basically a hired gun. It changes everything, because they become the boss, and then they take the data, they take what you do, and they basically interpret any way they want.
And you're working for Frank Rossetti. Did he have the same perspective of what they were doing as you did?
Oh, yeah. Frank Rossetti was actually fired by Bob Gallo. Frank Rossetti was getting too much credit as the discoverer of the co-discoverer of IL-2, of the first to isolate the first human disease-causing retrovirus. The whole cancer program back in the early 80s was targeted towards viruses that cause cancer. And Frank and Bernie Poise were the ones that isolated the virus associated with, actually causative for, a deadly leukemia called adult T-cell leukemia.
So you were actually being forced to work in a dangerous environment as a scientist, do things in laboratories that you thought could be dangerous to the people directly involved. What was the danger in your mind at that moment?
Well, this was the first human disease-causing retrovirus, and you had pregnant women. You had young women. And you didn't know if it could be transmitted through the air. You knew nothing about, retroviruses stay with the host forever, for generations, and can cause a great deal of damage that we now appreciate at the molecular level from our work for 30 years. So we said, no, we won't use an open air centrifuge. We're talking about lab releases of viruses. Well, if you put an open air centrifuge and concentrate hundreds of liters of virus paste, of cell paste, from where we were growing the virus in a cell line called HUT 102 from a man with the disease whose T cells had been transformed by the virus. So this is the kind of work that we're talking about right now, 30 years later. And they had no regard for the, women. I'm 23 years old. My boss was maybe 30, it was of danger to everyone in that facility for the risk of releasing viruses. We had no idea how they transmitted.
What is your recourse there? We said we wanted it. We were, sort of trying to blow the whistle to stop,
We wrote letters.
Where do you go?
We wrote letters to the Washington Post. I was naive, so it was basically just do it or you're fired, and so we did it. We kept all the other young married women, pregnant women out. We worked around the clock. We did it when nobody was around at night, put ourselves at risk. And shortly thereafter, I got a letter saying they didn't need a protein chemist in the fermentation chemistry program anymore, and I was the only protein chemist. So this is what, you know, there were a lot of policies that Ronald Reagan made, including, you know, we've talked before about the Bayh-Dole Act and other things, but among the worst, you know, things he did was the scam of having basically industry-run scientists.
Is it possible that, because I've been watching this recently in a lot of the email dumps, conversations about the lab or like investigation lab or investigation of things, he'll put it into a private nonprofit or into a private, and I keep thinking to myself, the reason we're here, the reason we know what we know is what we can FOIA, right? The Freedom of Information Act request. You know, here at ICANN, we have sent out thousands of FOIA requests, you know, and a lot of them focused on Fauci. But every time they move it into a private company or into, suddenly all of that's invisible now. Is that what you think is happening when they're overseeing a department like yours? Technically, you're private. So anything you're doing, they can say is confidential and or is private and is not, you know, I think vulnerable to FOIA requests to see what was that study doing, right?
Right.
It's up to Fauci's interpretation of saying, well, yeah, we've worked with that lab, but, you know, what happens in there, I have no control over. Is that essentially how this works?
That's essentially how it works. It's his plausible deniability, and it's been going on for, you know, since 1980s. I started 1980 and started working for Frank in 1983. It's been going on since that time. And so they even hold meetings off-site, you know, as you know from, you know, William Thompson and the little data burning party. They do it on a Saturday to when the government's closed. They would go to a place called Arley in Virginia, a private facility, and hold meetings off-site so they wouldn't be on government facilities committing really these crimes.
Mm-hmm. I suppose there's people that would say, is that how the government has to work? I mean, everything can't be visible. We're talking about bioweapons, protecting ourselves from foreign invaders or, you know, dangers. Shouldn't they be allowed some level of privacy or plausible deniability, do you think?
I don't see it that way. I think all the data should be shown. Had the data been shown, we could have solved the problem a long time ago. We've known for, you know, decades about animal viruses and their association with cancer, and yet we denied that our practices, our laboratory practices, were generating these viruses and these diseases.
Fauci was not loved. I was pretty young during AIDS epidemic. I mean, I, you know, I sort of remember it was a part of the world we grew up in, but I think I remember there were protests, you know, fire Fauci back then, essentially, was, how does he survive? I mean, I think we're all sitting here. This man is probably one of the longest employed government, you know, officials in perhaps the history of this country, certainly in this, you know, time period.
Right.
What is, I mean, you've had time to think about what drives this guy. Is there bigger people behind him? Is he a fall guy? Is he just a mouthpiece for a larger agenda?
Oh no, he's at the pinnacle of all of it. He and Bob Gallo have stayed there for, you know, all of these years. Bob Gallo more since, you know, he got caught in the whole AIDS debacle, HIV. Mm-hmm. Tony Fauci and Bob Gallo were just pure evil. Just pure evil. I remember the day, you know, it's like, oh, you know, Frank, isolate a virus, and Cliff Lane and I want to go on the Tonight Show. That's what Fauci said. You know, healthy young men are dropping like flies, and all he wanted to do was go on the Tonight Show. And Cliff Lane's one of his chief long-reigning scientists. That's another thing that Ronald Reagan did. He removed the retirement age. Tony Fauci would have been gone in 2009, and we would have never had COVID.
Is he driven by money, power, fame? What is the Achilles heel of Tony Fauci? What drives him? If we were to figure it out.
I think power and fame. He's got all the money. He controls more than $6 billion in grants. So it's, you know, it was fame. It was be on the Tonight Show.
This pandemic starts, you know, we're saying a year and a half now. We had a year and a half. Is that how long this insanity's been going on? When did the red flags first go up for you?
The red flags were always up for me. It was a matter of when, because I remember, of course, the so-called Ebola outbreak of 2014. Mm-hmm. That Ebola virus had 300 mutations. Let's just call it gain of function from, you know, the Ebola virus in bats, but somehow the Liberians, the, you know, pesky people sitting on the oils and diamonds, just, you know, forgot how to cook their bat soup. I mean, the stories are the same. We were waiting for it with the corruption that surrounded the mouse retroviruses, the XMRVs that caused the explosion of cancer and diseases, our paper from 2009. We were waiting for it to see how they were going to rewrite history. And now they're calling it COVID-19 and long-haul COVID. You know, your spike protein coronaviruses don't have the gene syncytin. You know, syncytia are fused cells from retroviral envelopes. You know, and they just renamed the envelope spike proteins, but we've known since 1982, the envelope alone is the disease, the causative agent. You don't need the rest of the virus mm-hmm. if you made a synthetic one and you injected it. It's been a march of a plan of more than 20 years.
What is that plan? I mean, I think the hardest thing, when you hear it, it's really hard to accept that mm-hmm. people would release a virus onto innocent people in Africa. I mean, you can imagine if we're at war or there's some sick reasoning, but not the peaceful nation of America that runs UNICEF and tries to help all these poor children in Africa. And I'm paying my monthly, you know, amount to a nonprofit to save those children. What do you say to somebody that's just like, just don't believe people are that evil? What would be the reason?
Well, it was discovered, you know, that the way these viruses were getting into people, we're growing them in cell lines. We're growing them in continuously growing cell lines that have been in our lab 30, 40 or more years, collecting contaminants, being experimented on, changing sequences as technology advances, things like CRISPR, infecting them with different synthetic viruses, infectious molecular clones, we call them, studying them, you know, growing them. You don't have to imagine releasing them from the lab. They just didn't evaporate into the air. Those cell lines are maintained 2 million cells per vial. And we use those cell lines to grow the viruses we make vaccines. For instance, the Vero monkey cell line that we use, that's what we grow our polio vaccines, the polio virus in. And we've known that those that now... you can get recombinations in every fermentation, in every 200-liter fermentation. So with the vaccine injury compensation program, the only way liability returns to the pharmaceutical companies is if you know a manufacturing defect. Well, what's the manufacturing defect? You can't make a single viral vaccine. You can't use aborted fetal tissue cell lines. You can't use animal cell lines. You can't use cow blood, pig blood, chicken eggs, our influenza vaccines, the dog cells. You can't use any of that. You take away the trillion-dollar industry because now liability returns, and we can track that all the way back to HIV.
So do you believe, I mean, obviously, like you're saying, Ebola, has too many, is it the same thing? There's just too large a gain of function, too many steps to that gain of function to believe that it happened in nature. We would have tracked it. And then, of course, is the conversation now with the coronavirus. Sure. And this is where, I mean, I made a declarative statement for the high wire, you know, a couple months ago now, but where I just said, we're done looking at this as a natural virus. Like, I've been on the fence. I've been trying to be as objective as I can. But there's only a limit to how many world-renowned scientists I can talk to that say, I've looked at it. To me, the only remaining question is then, is this accidentally released or is it on purpose?
No, it's in the cell lines, and it has been. So what people don't realize is it's not an it, it's a them. And this is why we keep trying to get this to be understood. If you look, I probably sent it to you at one time, but there's a paper that came out in the Journal of Virology about bat tissues and the viruses that came from bat tissues. And what they do is they do that clade analysis, that phylogen. It's a type of analysis you do based on the sequences. That's what Jack Lyons-Weiler does so well. And you look at all the sequences of all the viruses in the cell lines, hundreds of them, including mouse viruses, including SIV, simian immune deficiency virus. So if you can have recombination events, and you can get...
Explain that term to me. I'm still struggling with recombination. What does that mean?
So the virus actually can recombine. It can meet with another virus in that cell line. And as it's growing, because the cell line is by definition defective, because otherwise cells don't grow on their own outside of the host, outside of the monkey. You know, that's a cancer cell by definition, so it's crippled in mechanisms. So what basically happens is two viruses...
Is that on purpose? We don't want it growing.
I mean, that's cancer. So okay. They're called immortalized, and they're transforming if they actually can grow in you and cause cancer, which they can't. They're just immortalized. They grow in the lab.
Okay.
And so we use other animals, other animal blood, like we use bovine serum to grow them, because you have to use proteins. And so it's really an art to develop cell lines. And this is what I've done literally my entire career.
Okay.
Is you can't study a virus unless you can grow it. So that was the work I did with Ebola in the 90s, mixing bat tissues. What we learned at the end of our, you know, at the end of my career, our studies in 2011, the real kicker on the recombinances is that in every single fermentation batch, every time you grow a vaccine lot in 200 liter fermenters, you can get dozens of new strains of viruses through recombination events, just like that. In 2 weeks, you'd never know what was.
Are these unique viruses? I mean, is this a unique recombination, a mutation of sorts?
Correct. They're going to look like a different strain. So this is why now it's important we have this discussion, because, you know, as I've said, you know, Tony Fauci will come out with the strain du jour. You know, he will come out with the strain of the day, and he won't be lying, because that's the technology that Ralph Barrett talks about, the no-see-em. You don't have to make it in the laboratory, and there are just dozens of viruses in those, not only coronaviruses, but retroviruses, where you've got the reverse transcriptase, so you can literally make a new retrovirus in only a few weeks in a fermenter. So it's very important that people understand this right now, because otherwise it'll go on forever.
I get recombination. These viral particles come together and they sort of make a new mutation. They come back to life and start a new Frankenstein life of their own.
Right.
Then what is reverse transcriptase? I just heard you mention that. What does that term mean?
Well, so retroviruses have really two key genes. So they have an RNA genome that they reverse transcribe right backwards into DNA. And then they have another gene or enzyme called integrase, and that's like a pair of scissors that cuts and inserts the provirus, which is only about 8,000 base pairs, into the DNA. So every time your DNA is transcribed and translated, you will transcribe and translate the retroviruses. So retroviruses are a very special class of viruses, and that's why they're so deadly, because they stay in your genome, in the genome of the host, forever, and can change the expression of the genes, can change the regulation of the genes, can, you know, turn on oncogenes, turn off tumor suppressor genes. That kind of thing is what's so important about reverse transcriptase. And that's key. Humans don't have reverse transcriptase except for in the telomerase in the end of the chromosomes and things. So when we think about the levels of reverse transcriptase that we're also injecting by injecting other animal tissues using these animal cell lines, we're adding reverse transcriptase that can write that COVID mRNA, can write other mRNAs from these shots backwards and insert them in the DNA for, you know, forever, for generations to come.
So when they say that the, you know, it's a total conspiracy that these mRNA affect your DNA in any way, I mean, that's the argument they make.
They're absolutely, 98% of our mRNA is regulatory. microRNA, small inhibitory RNA, long chain non-coding RNA. They absolutely regulate the expression of your genes and can change permanently the gene expression in any given cell type.
When you're watching this argument right now in the press, light argument, obviously the press is, I think it's become so obvious they have to say something, so they're dipping their toes in this. But when you watch Rand Paul, let's say, grilling Tony Fauci over, you funded Wuhan Lab, it was gain of function. No, we never funded gain of function. You see this word game, this parsing of words by Fauci. Is there a line of questioning that we need to, does Rand Paul, is there, how do you pin Fauci, or is it impossible? Is what he's doing, is this how he's set it up so that he can say, hey, I never really, we funded this definition, which was not gain of function. They did something outside of that. Now, we don't know that he wasn't in a private room somewhere orchestrating exactly that. But do you think they're going to be able, do you think there's a smoking gun here? Do you think Fauci can be nailed to the wall, or is he going to slide out of this again?
Well, I mean, I don't expect him to suffer at all. I think he'll get out of it again because, you know, he was caught red-handed in HIV/AIDS. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was murder, the vaccine that they inoculated the military with. Giving millions of healthy young men, you know, pieces and parts of HIV and destroying their lives with diseases like PTSD and cancers. Yeah, they got out of it then and they should have been convicted then. So, you know, he can just keep lying. He's the consummate liar. It's all a lie. You can track it all down, as Rand Paul has quite well. So, you know, the plausible deniability is the way you can hear the way he lies in his words. He does it all the time. And, you know, I don't have a lot of, you know, hope, even though you watch this on TV and hope everybody will wake up. But, you know, he should have been in prison a long time ago. And they all should have been. It's not just, you know, at the top of every level of our corrupt government, between the FDA, you know, our food is toxic, the CDC, you know, these agencies have destroyed the health of our country, if not our world, and they're never held accountable.
I was, you know, talking with my wife, Lee, about this, just looking at these email releases, some of the things we're seeing. We see him admitting simply that masks don't really work to a, you know, coworker. I want to fly. Do I need to wear a mask? Look, it's not going to do anything for you. The microns of the virus are too small. They're going to go right through it. So there's really no purpose. So we see again, like, I mean, his original statement, which these are useless. You could wear one if it makes you feel better, but it's not. That's what he said on 60 Minutes.
Right.
You know, which I believe was the truth. I mean, people say, you know, then he said he was lying, then he's telling the truth. You can decide wherever you want then. What he's just admitted is I'm a liar. Yeah. I'll lie to you to achieve an agenda. If that makes you feel good, then I don't know why you listen to him any further. But is there a part of this? So masks don't really work. And I think the big issue in these emails is we see him saying, mm-hmm. you know, that, look, if this ends up having a death rate between 2.2 to 0.5%, then it's a flu. Mm-hmm. It's just a flu season, which is exactly where this landed. You know, we're exactly in a flu season. And so then, and this is what people don't get, like Dell, people died. And this mm-hmm. to me, if there is a space where he may be vulnerable, it's not going to be gain of function again. I think you're right. There's just too many players, Daszak, everybody's got, they've built the protections for this guy. Mm-hmm. But we watched on television as President Donald Trump says, I like hydroxychloroquine, I want to make this available. And we watched Tony Fauci fight that from the beginning. You know, and then we see this involvement when Fauci starts pointing to the Solidarity study, these studies that we now know were using lethal doses of hydroxychloroquine. It seems to me that he is a little more exposed on the denial of treatment. I mean, essentially, as I was thinking about driving in this morning, we're all a part of a Tuskegee experiment. I mean, what took Tuskegee down was you had treatment for syphilis and you didn't give it to these people. Mm-hmm. That's illegal.
Correct.
Right? And that's exactly what's happened. I mean, even if the treatment is as simple as give the give the man or a woman coming in some oxygen. You're denying them oxygen. If they were coming with flu last year or a coronavirus last year, you immediately give them oxygen. You're denying them oxygen until they're getting into a critical state. Then you're venting them, you know, as one doctor said to me, we're drugging, venting, and killing them. Do you think there may be some more vulnerability there? Because we all, that's on television. His statements against treatments, which we knew were viable, are in the press. We have a history of that.
But Del, that's exactly what he did in HIV. We had peptide T. We had type 1 interferon. We could have used AZT and some of the analogs at the right dose. And did he? You know, look at the movies. Look at the band played on. Look at the Dallas Buyers Club. We knew cannabis was, you know, could stop the cachexia. We knew there was actually, you know, various natural products, silymarin for the liver, to keep the liver. We could have used all of those, particularly peptide T, and it would have saved millions of lives, a non-toxic therapy. And to this day, it that was 30 years ago. The developer, the late great Dr. Candace Pert, never did see that get to be a therapy, and it was safe, non-toxic, and could have changed everything. He did the same thing. That's why I have no faith. People forget history. That's why it's so important to show, you know, silence equals death. It's the same thing. He's doing exactly the same thing as he did before and got away with it. Only now it's not just the gays, the IV drug users, and the prostitutes. Now it's, you know, everyone.
Right. When someone asks you, I mean, we think it's all about money, right? Even if it's about money, doesn't peptide T, is what you called it, yep, doesn't that make money? Like, why is it the treatments that work? Why are you pushing remdesivir, which ends up being a turkey with this thing and showed us that in all the trials, when we have hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin blowing the studies? Ivermectin's so successful, they just stopped the study because we're just killing people continuing the study. It's so obvious, right, that all of our frontline doctors aren't getting it if they're using this prophylactically. Why does he choose remdesivir? Are these just backroom? Is it just money? Or is there a reason they want something that fails?
You could say it's just money because they're not patentable. You know, they're pennies on the dollar. We talk about, you know, Sermon, 100-year-old essential medicine. You know, we knew Sermon back in the 80s. It was one of the first things we pulled off the shelf for HIV. But it worked better for the murine leukemia viruses, for a class of viruses that were simple, you know, just a simple retrovirus like the ones we isolated in 2009. But anybody using Cerumen and using it properly, very, very low dose, it costs pennies. 100-year-old essential medicine, pennies. And after the study, Bayer and Monsanto, who owned the drug, these kids in San Diego, you probably remember it, got their life back, started talking,
talking about autism.
And they took it away from, drug away from. So because you can't make the association. So it has to be more than money. I can't comprehend, you know, that level of evil. I just cannot comprehend what's going on right now.
What is your, the question I have right now is we're an exciting moment in this movement of truth seeking. There's a lot of light shining down. The emails for Fauci to watch Tucker Carlson, you know, for me, that's mainstream. I mean, I don't know what anyone else is saying, but at least it's on my television. I am watching investigations. I'm seeing discussions, interviews of injured people from the vaccine. Things that we haven't been here for at least 10 years. I mean, I think since Katie Couric dared to, you know, even talk to someone about the connection of vaccines and autism, media has just totally supported the drug companies, and we know they're owned there. But there seems to be this renaissance. We have a nation right now, the United States of America, more than 50% have not gotten this vaccine. I just recently saw they're saying somewhere around 42%. That's nowhere near where I think they dreamed they would be. And excitement, the stadiums are empty. All of the vaccine sites are empty. Do you feel like, you know, a message you've been trying to get out, which is don't trust these people, it seems to be taking hold. You must have some hope because of that.
Yeah, I always have hope, but what I see is the vulnerable. And I continue to see the vulnerable just as I spent, you know, all my life, you know, with the vulnerable, with the people who, you know, just with those AIDS patients, I'll just never forget those men, you know, just begging us. You could stand next to two men and say, come on, what's the difference? We're giving you the same drug. You're dying and you're not. Please trust us. So, and they're like, we can't. Scientists are murderers. So I was on that. I was on both sides of that. And, mm-hmm. you know, that none of us are trusted because of these, you know, two or three evil people at the top it's tough. So I do have hope, but I see, you know, the vulnerable. I see my friends. I see my own family with injured kids from MMR. I see, you know, what they can't get jobs. They, you know, we're blue collar workers. We're blue collar people. So we're the people that are going to be forced to get the shot, or we can't feed our families. And you have to make those choices. And I remember those choices over the past 30 years. So, yes, I have hope, and I always have hope, and I just keep praying that, you know, that somebody somewhere will have, you know, integrity. I know when we were in Congress. Was it yeah. Jason Chaffetz and yeah. March 31st, 17? You know, we had hope then.
Yeah.
But nothing happened. So maybe yeah. this is our time, and maybe something will happen, and we can change everything, and we're gonna. But you know, somebody has to want to. You know, we have to have.
Well, I think the people have to want to. I mean, I think that if there's one thing that may be different, is sort of as you said, the AIDS epidemic is gays and prostitutes and intravenous drug users. I know it ended up being a lot of other people at risk, and I don't want to sound like we're just right. saying that, but that's how it was. So we all said, well, I mean, that's what that is. The MMR autism issue was a bunch of babies, pretty small group, you know, one out of, I guess, 45 right now or whatever. If I don't see it in back, you know, when this all started, 1 in 250, okay, that's just your issue. We're talking about these people or Ebola is 21,000 people in Liberia. We're talking about hundreds of millions of people now taking this product that is, as you and I both know, not only didn't go through proper safety trials, but the only trials we can find anywhere look horrific.
Right.
Right? They look horrific. Mm-hmm. So for the first time ever, real human beings that were healthy before they walked in there, walked in, are coming out either dead or sick. You know, the potential for maybe reactions in the future to other viruses because of that vaccine. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that, though I think it could be somewhat catastrophic to our species and our societies, that the fact that it's regular, it's everybody now, that might be that enlightening moment, instead of it's, you know, we're not going to be able to say that's not me anymore, right?
Right.
We're all in it.
Right.
Is that the game changer, perhaps?
I hope so. I really hope so. You know, the healthy... I know we can solve the problem, but we didn't need to create it. That shot is the injection of the disease in a synthetic virus. So if we could get people to understand, you are injecting, you are so afraid of breathing a few particles of a virus that you would allow 50 billion to be injected into a pregnant woman, that any doctor, cancer patients, you know, we struggle. I spent most of the last 3 weeks struggling with cancer patients who are being denied therapy if they don't get the shot. And the shot will kill them, or the mask will kill them. Hypoxia-inducible factor 1 alpha hypoxia. It's a blowtorch on cancer. You can't wear a mask if you're a cancer patient. You know, it's just, you know, but those are the people right now who are getting sick, and they're innocent, and they've already paid enough, is the way I look at it. So I hope so.
Is it foolish to think, I've seen these memes out there that say Tony Fauci will be a fall guy. They'll take him out, and then there'll just be someone else behind him, and everything goes on business as usual. I personally look at that and I say, let's see them try and continue business as usual without Tony Fauci. To me, whether or not he's the mind behind this, and you've put him at a pretty high level of where that's at, he is certainly one of the greatest liars the governmental science machine has ever had, and promoters of bad technologies and science. And a man we've all gotten used to can walk in front of a television set and say the exact opposite of what he said next week, and somehow only loses the confidence of half the nation, not the entire nation, right?
Yeah.
If we can take Fauci down, if we can have that Nuremberg trial that walks him off in handcuffs, do you think that's enough to start moving this nation and this world and science in a more positive direction?
Yeah, I think if we walk them off in handcuffs and take down the money, the NIAID controlling $6 billion, you need to break down the whole corrupt system from the fake news journal propaganda masquerading as science. That's our journals. That's JAMA. That's science. That's Nature. The Elsevier journals, they're bought and paid for commercials by pharma. Everything has to come down, and good people of integrity put at the head of these organizations in HHS. The FDA is corrupt. Our food is toxic, and they gave themselves the authority for drug efficacy. All it's supposed to be is safety. So if I can prove a natural product is safe and efficacious, then healthcare professionals can use it any way they want. That's what it should have been. But it's been corrupted over the last 40 years, over my entire career. More and more authority as Tony Fauci stood up against five presidents and, you know, Zika, Ebola, bird flu, swine flu. You know, it's all been there all along, and unless you stop him, you know, and I think a whole lot more than handcuffs, so that people know there's a real penalty. There's a real penalty. We need to. That's, you know, our book, Plague of Corruption. The subtitle is Restoring Faith in the Promise of Science. We need to restore faith in the promise of science and know that all the 99% of those honest scientists in the laboratory working hard every day, that their work won't be corrupted by the interpretation of a few who stand to gain while everyone else loses.
Judy, you've been a hero, a warrior, you know, a beacon of light through all of this. I will tell you, it's a personal mission of mine to see Tony Fauci walked off in handcuffs. I believe he's one of the most dangerous humans that's ever walked this planet. I think he's murdered hundreds of millions of Americans. And God knows if we, you know, the responsibility to Africa and the third world and whatever involvement he has there. But I believe that this virus, whatever it is, really was just a flu. Clearly the numbers say that. And probably less than that had we just treated it properly. So I'm not going to quit. So I hope that you and I get to have that day.
Yeah.
And we'll celebrate the moment that we watch a real bad guy go down.
That'd be a great day.
All right. Keep up the good work, Judy.
Thank you.
Love
Appreciate
you.
It.
All right.
Love you, too.
If you like that clip, then be sure to check out our live broadcast of The High Wire every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. Pacific time. You can watch it on Facebook, YouTube, iTunes, and Twitter. We'll see you there.